Hey, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Free to Help Others How to 12-Step Effectively panel discussion. My name is Jackie, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Step 12 tells us, in order to recover, you must carry the message to those who still suffer. And I'm sure we all know at least one person who would benefit from our program of recovery. But how do we start that conversation? How do we approach someone? In today's session, we will hear from each of our speakers for 20 minutes and then they will take questions for the final 20 minutes. Our first speaker was Mickey, but he's not here yet, or she, I don't know. He, okay, we'll have Ira go first. So thank you, Ira, here you go, your 20 minutes.
Okay, my name's Ira, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Ira.
My abstinence date is September 7, 1983. So, let's see, February 7th will be 31 years and 7 months. I'm a 100-pounder. I'm maintaining about 140 to 145-pound weight loss for 29 years. My high weight was 325 to 330. My driver's license lied when I came in that it said that I was 5'11", and I've never been over 5'7". And my sponsor said, that's what we do. He laughed at me a lot, so... Anyway, and I'm grateful that Jeff asked. The 12 step is the essence of it, I think. My problem as an overeater is I'm always thinking about myself, and I'm always scared, and what's going to happen, and what's this, and what's that, or I'm angry because I'm scared, and all this stuff has come out in inventory and that stuff. So the antidote is to stop thinking about myself. The disease is I want to keep thinking about myself. That's what leads me to want to overeat. And there is no perfect. You know, I learned that. I'm also sober, and I come from Pacific Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. So that was very, you know, kind of tough love stuff. In fact, I had a sponsor who said to me, I can love you so much it'll kill you. See, what real unconditional love is, and I learned about that here too, is I want you to win regardless of what you think of me. You know, and so it's inevitable. At least my experience was, it's inevitable that there's going to be friction because my ego is like, I don't want to be uncomfortable. In fact, my wife, who's 15 years abstinent, says it this way, you have to fight for the right to be uncomfortable. But what I get to do is I don't have to do it by myself. And I believe that the acknowledgement of powerlessness, which is what's step one, comes when I ask for help. And what I think we don't talk about a lot in the program is what actually a sponsor is. I mean, again, I'm sharing my own experience and my own opinion. The idea of finding somebody who has what I want when I'm nuts is kind of a non-starter because I don't know what I want. I want everything. I want nothing. I want, you know. So what I tell people is find somebody you think you can talk to. You know, you buttonhole somebody at a meeting. Can I call you? And call them and see what happens. Sponsors are not authorities. All we have to share is experience, strength, and hope. So, say, like, I had to do a food inventory. That's what my sponsor, and this is before green light, yellow light, and all that. I mean, he said, take yellow paper, you know, this is what I was told to do, and in the first column, foods that I don't have any problem with whatsoever. I'm not allergic to, is the way he said it. And then in the second column, foods in which I'm moderately allergic, what the amounts are, what triggers it, and all that. Foods that I can see. In the third column, foods that for one bite, one's too many, 1,000's not enough. In other words, foods I can't even touch. That's how it started for me. And I did it. I shared it with them. And so anytime it's come up with, well, I'm not willing to do that, the kind of sponsorship I got was, well, who's running this anyway? That's what I was told when I would come up with that. I cannot run my program myself. You know, and so I've been very fortunate. My current sponsor, well, I have two. I call my food in every day to a man who's got 34 years. And my step sponsor, my spiritual advisor, has been my sponsor for 30 years. He's 87 years old, lives with his girlfriend. And the reason, and he gave her a ring because that way he figured it would get her off his back to get married, you know, and all that stuff. He was a widower. And his wife, I knew for years, is somebody who died of the disease. Went to meetings, but she couldn't get it. She died of terrible complications of this thing, you know. So what you get to do if you're scared, and I'm scared, and what gets me in trouble more than anything else is being scared. And what that AA sponsor used to tell me when I around 12 years in the program, I went to him, and I was feeling like I didn't get along with anybody, and that I was feeling jittery and scared all the time. And you know what he said? Thank you. He said to me, Ira, you've been scared all your life, and you're going to continue to be scared till you're not scared anymore. You know? And I needed to hear stuff like that. That this stuff is not going to go away just because I want it to. You know? So when I get to ask a sponsor or a friend, in fact, it's interesting about the word sponsor. In the big book, it does not appear until the story of Vicious Cycle. It does not appear anywhere, the word sponsor, in the first 164 pages of the big book. It does not appear. And the sponsor, Jackie, the guy that sponsored, the guy who actually got the words as we understood it. I was told, by the way, to read two pages of the big book, reread it, and put it down. Because I was too smart for I'm good, and I wanted to figure this thing out so I could graduate and become an authority on it. You know. See. So what happened was, is that the sponsor was the guy that brought him into AA. Had been sober a month and then went out and died. That's the first reference to sponsor in the big book. Okay? So what you get to ask a sponsor is somebody who helps you, somebody you can talk to, and you get to ask if they ask you to do something that feels uncomfortable. This is the words that I recommend strongly. Anybody says, what was it like when you did it? And we don't do that here. So, and here's the other thing that I learned is that compliance is not surrender. Okay? Compliance is, I'll do what you tell me because you'll like me, you know. Surrender is, I can't do this myself. Tell me what to do. I need help. I'm nuts. And I'm going through some health things lately. We worked on the show here. You know, my life is good. And abstinence is not an issue for me. I liked what the speaker said about eating sober. Most of the time, I eat sober. There's times when I fool around with food, but not like I used to. You know? And nobody's perfect. And there ain't none. And nobody can teach you this thing either. I bristle when somebody says, well, I'm going to teach you. My job is to teach you about the program. That implies that there's a teacher here to me. A teacher's up here and we are students down here. If I understand anonymity at all, it's that we're all here. We're all on the same level. See? So, the thing is, you get to ask, and I encourage you, ask your sponsor, what was it like for you? Because, as I understand, in fact, may I? On page, I think it's 20. Let me find it. There is a solution, and that chapter, as I learned it, is about the fact that if it worked for Bill, it'll work for all of us. Let's see. Okay. Am I at 20? Let's see. What do I have to do? Or is it 18? Hold on 1 second. Let me Yeah, I have a little problem, physical problem. Let's see. Oh, here it is. Yeah, it's on 18. I'm sorry. Okay, in the middle of 18, which is in there as a solution, it says, highly competent psychiatrists who have dealt with us, and let's for now transpose alcoholic to overeater, I think it fits, have found it's sometimes impossible to persuade an alcoholic to discuss his or her situation without reserve. In other words, tell the truth. Strangely enough, wives, parents, and intimate friends usually find us even more unapproachable than do the psychiatrist and the doctor. Then, and generally when the big book is in italics, it wants you to remember it. Then it says, but the ex-problem overeater who has found the solution, who is properly armed with facts about himself, which come from inventory, right, can generally win the entire confidence of another overeater in a few hours. Until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. See, that's the understanding that's supposed to happen in order for this to work. See? You know, I have 10 minutes. You know, I mean, I'm sharing this with you because it's what I learned. You know, that's the idea. In other words, the sponsor is somebody who you have enough confidence to tell the truth to. That's what a sponsor is supposed to be. That's the ideal of what a sponsor is. It may not be pretty. It may not be easy. I have been yelled at. And I've been told I'm full of BS. And you know what? They can't talk to me that way. I got over it. You know, because I was full of BS. Because a lot of times, stuff will come into my head, and everything that comes into my head is not jewels. You know. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's not good stuff. See? And here's the other thing, too. If I was wrong all the time, linear thinking won't solve this either. And that is, if I do this, I'm going to get that. You know. The problem is, if I was wrong all the time, be simple. Just do the opposite of what's in my head. And obviously, if I was right all the time, just do whatever comes into my head. Problem is, I'm not wrong all the time. See? And in the AA, let me borrow this one. There's one, this is on step 5, but it relates to what we're talking about we're on the AA 12 and 12, page 59 and 60. It tells you why we need to share stuff with other people, which is one of the most important readings I know of. Let me find it. 57, 59.
What step is that on?
Step 5. It's in step 5 of the AA 12 and 12. It says, hence, this is on in the middle of page 59, hence, it was most evident that a solitary self-appraisal and the admission of our defects based upon that alone wouldn't be nearly enough. A solitary self-appraisal. We'd have to have outside help. See, it gets to me. If we were surely to know and admit the truth about ourselves. The help of God and another human being. Only by discussing ourselves, holding back nothing. Only by being willing to take advice and accept direction could we set on the road to straight thinking, solid honesty, and genuine humility. Then it says, yet many of us still hung back. We said, why can't God, as we understand him, tell us where we are astray? If the Creator gave us our lives in the first place, then he must know in every detail where we have since gone wrong. Why don't we make our admissions to him directly? Why do we need to bring anyone else into this? At this stage, the difficulties of trying to deal rightly with God by ourselves are twofold. And this is worth sharing with you about this, because this is what the essence of this program is, I believe. It says on page 60, Though we may at first be startled to realize that God knows all about us, we are apt to get used to that quite quickly. Somehow being alone with God doesn't seem as embarrassing as facing up to another person. Until we sit down, now this is the thing about the relief. Until we actually sit down and talk aloud about what we have so long hidden, be it about food or anything else, our willingness to clean house is still largely theoretical. When we are honest with another person, it confirms that we have been honest with ourselves and with God. Then this is the most important paragraph here. The second difficulty is this. What comes to us alone may be garbled by our own rationalization and wishful thinking. The benefit of talking to another person is that we can get his direct or her direct comment and counsel on our situation, and there can be no doubt in our minds what that advice is. Going it alone in spiritual matters is dangerous. How many times have we heard well-intentioned people claim the guidance of God when it was all too plain that they were sorely mistaken? Lacking both practice and humility, they had deluded themselves and were able to justify the most errant nonsense on the ground that this was what God had told them. It is worth noting that people of very high spiritual development almost always insist on checking with friends or spiritual advisors the guidance that they feel they have received from God. Surely then, a novice ought not lay himself open to the chance of making foolish, perhaps tragic blunders in this fashion. While the comment or advice of others may be by no means infallible, it is likely to be far more specific than any direct guidance we may receive while we are still so inexperienced in establishing contact with a power greater than ourselves. That's why I need to talk to somebody else. And I do every day. See? Be it outreach calls or whatever. So what I'm trying to say to you is, we make a too big a deal of what a sponsor is. A sponsor is somebody to talk to who's been through it. So like for instance, I've had health issues. I now know that the beds at Tarzana Hospital are far more comfortable than those at Cedars. It's not something I particularly want to know, but if somebody needs to know that, I found out about it. See? You go through stuff. And part of the reason that I want to continue to abstain is at least I can go through with my head reasonably, you know, parallel to the ground rather than facing it. You know? And the anonymity part of this, and the paradox is you can't keep it unless you give it away, which means anybody in here who's got time should be sharing with another person. But the paradox to that is you can't transmit what you ain't got. See? So one of the reasons for going through the exercise of the 12 steps is how I manifest God in my life. This spiritual change is I'm a selfish person. I had lost 100 pounds 3 times. And the last time I've maintained it, and I was up to as much as 330 pounds, an angry drunk, and I used to say a fat, drunk trumpet player in L.A. is a bad career move, you know, to a point at which I have a family, a lovely home, I have a successful career, and most of the time, although I alienate people sometimes, I get along. That was not the case when I first came to Overeaters Anonymous. And so what the anonymity part of Overeaters Anonymous means is that nobody, they used to say in AA, there's nobody too dumb for this program, some of us are too goddamn smart. You know. The point being that what I would hope comes out of this is that not only those of you who are having difficulty finding a sponsor, finding one, but that you'll become sponsors. That is the ultimate gift, becoming a giving person, that is the spiritual change that ensures that I don't have to blow my abstinence, is sponsoring other people. See? That's what the deal is. I don't care how much service you do. I was a World Service Delegate from the Valley. I think I went to 16 of them all together. you know. And Jerry's here. I ran one time thinking, well, they're gonna, and I finished so bad I can't tell you. But it was okay, because I wasn't supposed to be there, you know. But the thing is, I've done every job in intergroup, you know, I've spoken, I've led retreat, you know, all that stuff. But the essence of the program is not that. The essence of the program is helping another overeater recover. See? So the idea, I'm not ready to sponsor yet. Not true. All you have to do is you share your experience. What they used to tell us in AA is if you got one day, you can help somebody with half a day. See, all the other stuff is ego stuff. What are they going to think of me? What if I do it wrong? They'll get mad at me. You know what? People have gotten mad at me. People have threatened me. A woman got in my face at a meeting. I don't know. I didn't do anything. But she left and I'm still here. See? And that's what I want for you guys. Gentlemen and ladies, I'm sorry. You know. That's what I want for you guys is to recover. But like doing like some kind of diet and calling it the steps, or going to a few meetings and saying, I've been in the program for 20 years, why can't I get this? What I was taught is, you're not in the program, you're going to meetings. Going to meetings is not being in the program. The program is this stuff. And what we're supposed to do, as I understand it, again, this is just strictly my experience, is we're supposed to do this stuff and share it with each other. That's what we share at meetings. See? Not giving a whole bunch of apologies. It's like, like what I was taught, for instance, if you're going to take a chip, get up there and say, wow, I got a chip. Ain't that great? Not like, oh, I don't feel like I don't deserve it. There was a guy named Al Marine who made a career as an alcoholic living underneath Santa Monica Pier. I knew him when he had 50 years. And he said, yeah, Ira, he said, the purpose of sharing is to inspire the alcoholic. He said it like that, and you believed it, because if you didn't, you were going to die. You know. You know what I'm saying? It's like, that's the thing. It's like this idea about being so passive and shy and, geez, I hope everybody likes me. My time is up. It doesn't matter. It's the only thing that matters is you matter. Thanks for letting me share. Keep coming back.
Incredible. I could just cross talk on all of that, everything I needed to hear. Just want to get this off. Hi, I'm Ganita. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi
everybody. Whether you know me, whether you don't know me, I am profoundly grateful to each of you. And because of that, I can be profoundly grateful to every single creation that God has created, period. And every single creation, whether it's the tree or a squirrel or a dog or a cat, is all by His will. And what this life of spirituality teaches me, the true life, the only life, the life that where I take that I can then enjoy the materialistic life, is exactly the gratitude of acceptance and the desire to get down on my knees and say, keep me stupid. Keep me stupid and keep me humbled and take my thinking and let me do you. That's it. That means let me do me, and that's it. I've been in program for about 3.5 years now, one miraculous day at a time, and what it really is, as incredible as that number is, it's literally about today. And I couldn't have said that before because life is so rich today. And what's made it richer in the journey is that I get to think about you and not me. To just briefly qualify in terms of my food history, I come from a deep core of control. Maybe somebody can relate. I have learned in this program that I didn't just come in as a compulsive overeater. I came as a hardcore restrictor. I came as a hardcore restrictor because I needed to control every single emotion and every single fact and be prepared for every single thing that there could ever really be. And to learn that my self-centeredness meant that I couldn't be about just me controlling you was one thing. To learn that I was powerless over being human was another. Then when I finally accepted that, okay, I accepted it's powerlessness being human and I accept the freedom of that. Now why can't I just control that acceptance? You know, and I wake up every morning and I get reminded, just like Ira said so beautifully, the discomfort is God. And that's what makes me profoundly grateful for this disease. Had I not come to believe I am an addict, had I not been blessed to become a recovering addict one day at a time, I could not have something beyond what my control could ever possibly give me. So when I first started sponsoring, something inside of me realized that whatever hesitation, and I see it more on a conscious level today, whatever hesitation I have is only about perfection and expectations. I'm not going to do it right. I don't even do this. How can I tell you what to do? You know, I mean, how in the world am I going to, and now I need to be enough for you. I need to make it all about you. I need to make it perfect about you because God forbid I should disappoint you because then the finger's pointing at me as being a failure. And that's my disease in every single way, shape, and form. So first it was like one sponsee and then it was like another and I was, you know, and they come and they go. And it's like learning to see acceptance on a new level. There's no bad about it. It's just like sometimes you're in a cycle of insanity and sometimes you're not. And we're always okay, you know? We're always okay. When I first started to work with a sponsor, I realized how incredibly amazing it was. And what got me starting to want a sponsor was I was just really like, it was all about me. And I was much more happier doing service because it got me out of me. And you just sort of, you know, the discomfort just means growth of greatness. Thank you. To see change is about letting God reveal what God is revealing, you know? And I couldn't come into this program because my head was so full of having been told what to do all my life and being like a little tap dancing doll that if you tried to help me, I really was excluded in a small little hole, like I can't listen to you because I need to make sure I'm ready. I need to make sure I need to have that control to make sure. And what a spiritual awakening teaches me more and more every day on this page of 88 is we alcoholics are undisciplined. So we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. And what that has become to me is do the thing that I'm uncomfortable about. Do the thing that I'm challenged about. And that means I have to be willing to, not have to be, I just need to do right now. Because I am powerless over convincing myself and I am powerless over convincing anybody else. But somehow, some way, all those fears about sponsoring, of like making sure I'm enough for you and all of that, like with any fear, I'm not going to be able to rationalize and justify it and come up with the conclusion and be ready. That was like saying, I'm ready to be abstinent today, God. There's always a little voice, and there probably always will be a little voice. Are you sure about that? Are you convinced? Are you ready? You know, it's like I'll feel God all the way, but right there, before I make that execution, are you sure about that? And that's always the choice. Do I want to focus on the gratitude of, yes, I got the candle. Even when I feel like shit inside, even when that voice is like, come on, you're such a fucking fraud, you know? You don't even feel like this gratitude, but yet you're saying it anyways. That's when I get the choice. What do I want my life to look like? What do I want my day to look like? Do I want it to continue to be filled with self and pity and so forth and so forth? Or am I willing to just walk beyond and make it about somebody else and do my day? And that is, to me, the courage to change. And so when it came down to continuing to add more sponsees and become a sponsor, it was just like with everything else when there's the hesitation of fear. Just do it. There's nothing else to justify or rationalize. And that, I think, just is the miracle of continuing to be abstinent one day at a time with a little bit more clarity every day, is that I could stop writing the dissertation on it and continuing to do it. The miracle today is I absolutely have such a desire to be uncomfortable, which I call, it's such a gift. It's not even it's happiness to try and make an extra 15 minutes for somebody, to try and like let go of what my day of perfection is going to look like. Like, make sure I do my writing. Otherwise, how, you know, I do, like, I have half an hour today between my very lovely, long, full of gratitude day. And the thing that called to my heart was, I want to talk to this newcomer who I haven't seen in a meeting in a really long time, but I've had the privilege to text with her on and off. And when I get up in the morning, for some reason, she'd been my text buddy, and I haven't seen her in a while. So now the diseased voice of perfection was saying, you know, you really need to make sure you do that for yourself. Like, make sure you write and you write and you make sure you get that done. And this is where God comes in. What would you like to do? I'd really like to just connect with her. I'd really like to go to a meeting with her afterwards. And I'm going to trust that my program's always taken care of in God's hands, and the time will always just work out like it does. Until this day, I haven't seen him fail me. It's been a busy day at the birthday party. I got some amazing writing done yesterday. How that happened? God. My job is to follow the intuition of letting God discipline me. And that today means exactly what it is. Kill me so much with love that I don't know how to do this. I came from God, help take my judgment, help take my expectations, help take my perfectionism, help take my self-pity, help take all these things of negativity, help take the self-centered fear, help take this. Today it's like, help me understand and help do for me what I cannot do for myself, which is live in the gratitude. Live in the gratitude. And how that happens is exactly me just doing the action of the moment and trusting he'll show me the next thing. And the desire to want to give was really walking past the fear of what about me? What about my needs? Will I be neglecting myself because I did it for so many years of my life that I ate? I neglected my needs. I neglected my wants. I neglected my this. I neglected my that. And really what it is I didn't neglect any of it. It was exactly the way that God was having it to be. I just became aware of my desires when I stopped eating and I started living in them. And one of my greatest desire is not to be with myself and be shopping. My greatest desire is to want to connect with another human being, especially another overeater, another recovering overeater, another so-and-so. And because somehow, some way, when I, let me tell you, I don't want to. Okay, that's my old self. I don't want to talk to you about feelings. I don't want to think about you. And that's when I need to the most. That's when I need to the, because something happens when I do that. This heart of old step four that really was like so pissed off because she didn't get what she wanted for so many years because she didn't speak up for herself. That power to want to control, to make sure, that gets melted away when I talk to you guys. And somebody said to me, we learn to turn the other cheek in recovery. And I really liked that because that's really what I want to do. And as much of what I call that emotional volcano is erupting inside of me of pride and what about me, I turn the other cheek because I've experienced the hand of God over. And just the other day, last week, and this was God coming through because 2 days later I got asked to be in this workshop when I hadn't even planned to be coming over on a Sunday, is exactly this page of gratitude on in action on page 199 in the big book of that story. I was finishing up with this story and I woke up in the morning and I was definitely in myself and I didn't realize it. Shocker. And I knew it too at the same time. And I really, really was on bended knee in a way, in my own way of saying, God, I really want to forget about myself, but I have a deep rooted fear of I'll be neglecting myself. I'll be neglecting my needs when I put somebody else before mine. So how do I make sure it's self-care and not self-sacrifice? Because I grew up with a lot of self-sacrifice. And something inside of me read a quote from the religion that I practice, and it was so powerful. It was exactly what my desire is in doing, which is humility is in the action. I've done my steps. It's time to continue to be in the action to carry the message forward. The fact that I'm meeting with the newcomer rather than the compulsion to feel my perfection to write the dissertation is my discomfort of saying, okay, I'm trusting my intuition because that's my desire and that's God. That's living the step seven in action of humility. That's living the action and trusting that everything is exactly right for me. And when the desire becomes greater than the fear, that's when I'm willing to hear the hands of God. And like I said, I'm very stubborn. I'm an addict. I need to let God discipline me, which is it's okay to accept that voice of desire that I want to make it about you. So I read this and something inside of me said, finish working on the story, gratitude in action. The last line helped secure yet again the message. Please don't worry about figuring it out, Ganit. I've got the figuring out part. It said, keep my hand in the hand of God. And that's what really keeps me in the faith and the trust of abstinence every day at a time to even begin with. I'm always protected. Whether the mind and the thoughts and the volcanoes are erupting, I've gone through enough of it to know I'm always protected. And as long as God is with me, which is always, and as long as I'm willing to remember God, which is always, I am always safe and it's okay to walk past any fear, including the one to make it about you rather than about me. And it said exactly what I needed and wanted to hear. Pass on the message to other alcoholics. Must think more about others than myself. More important thing is to practice these principles in all my affairs. And what happens is when I do that, when I'm willing to just follow the desire, that I don't need the compulsion of making sure how many more times am I going to write on this fear. Rather, the action, I'm not going to justify it, and there will always be one more, because that's the compulsion. Rather, that, okay, I'm just going to let it go and let the volcano erupt possibly and know that the hand of God is protecting me. I abandon myself to God when I'm willing to give myself a break like that. I abandon myself to God because of it. And what the miracle is exactly the desire to want to give is for me. It's for me. I recently started sponsoring food. I'd been sponsoring steps for quite some time. And something inside of me said, after reading the chapter, working with others, and my sponsor mentioned that to me too, you have a great nutritional guidance and value in what you eat and so forth. And I don't really work the food, blessedly, so much with her, because it's really, you know, after doing it for a while, like, you know what your food plan and abstinence can be at times. And I just realized, what's the fear behind it? Why don't I want to? And what the fears were, and I got a chance to look at them, and really it was, again, I want to be free. And if I want to be free, then I'm willing to be free. And sure, I've had the discomforts of body dysmorphia and image, and really the discomfort of, oh my God, this is working for me. I don't want to tell you because I don't want to fuck it up, because it feels like it's perfection if I tell you how to do it. And the miracle of when I just keep walking through, and how even just a week later, I'm sitting yesterday morning for a cup of coffee with a fellow, and she's asking me, and she's kind of, you know, working her food, and how natural it is for me, just 1 week later, for me to be so open to say, so this is how I do it, this is what I do, and this is how it works. And the freedom from that, and the recognition of the fear of, oh my God, I've told her, now I'm going to fuck it up, you know. Really, it's walking through an old idea of making the gratitude real and trusting that when I give, I'm giving something beyond to anything else. It's surrendering over a very powerful old jinx. Now, I'm not going to justify and convince myself that it's okay and that jinx is not going to happen. How is it going to happen? By me saying, God will make it happen. To let the emotions pass through and to continue to do what I need to do, which is to be here. And when I'm able to give to you, I swear I have a life with my family, with my job, with my friends, outside of this program that I could never have had. I came from so much exclusion, like it was a three people world, okay? It was a three people world where I came from. I have a calendar that is so full every day. I have a desire to rise at like 4 a.m. to be at 6 a.m. service for temple. I'm going to meetings at night and meeting newcomers. How in the world does this happen? The desire is greater than the ego. The desire is greater than the fear. The desire of, I'm going to wrap it up, the desire to trust, to let go of getting the approval of another human being, and the desire to put my hand in the hand of God and say that what I'm doing is now taking all that energy and aligning it to the desire to make it good, do it. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you, Ganit and Ira. It is now time for questions and answers. Please raise your hand, and I will call on as many questioners as possible. We have a lot of time, so please have some questions. Please be aware that we are recording this panel, and when asking a question, your voice may be audible on the recording. Who would like to ask the first question?
My concern is, like, the first sponsor I had said some things that actually were very hurtful and very harmful. And I got through them, and I'm a better person for it. And I think that, that my higher power gave me those challenges because program was a safe space to get through those things that, that had tripped me up before and driven me to the food. But I am so scared that I'm going to screw up. And the fact is, like, being human, I know I will. But how, what is the process, if you two could speak to a time that you made a mistake with a sponsee and how you navigated through that, whether it was an amends or what the consequence was and how you were able to move forward? If you've got one, unless you're perfect.
You go first.
So just to kind of, I can relate to what you said so much. Oftentimes when I'm not wanting to do something because of the discomfort, and my sponsor will just sometimes say something, and I've had to work through my side of the street as to why I'm afraid and what I'm afraid of. And it's not really about her. I mean, she plays a part, but it's really never about her. Then I need to just like let that simmer, and I think that pausing is okay as well, because I need to let God discipline me, which is with love, to just give that fear, maybe write a Dear God letter, give that fear to God and see what comes back to you. I have always had the deep-rooted fear of making a mistake, whether it was with a sponsor or not. And you know what? It's what I look at it today is that it's a process. It's not a mistake. It really is like acceptance says. How many, you know, I mean, to ride a bike, we fall off. We scrape our knees. God's in the humility of it, not the perfection of it, you know? So everybody's going to be different. And the power to give to another human being to say, if I screwed up somebody's life in some way, that is exactly what I'm in recovery for. How much power am I going to give my higher power, or how much power am I going to give an outside situation, place, person, or thing, you know? So it was very interesting that you said both of your sponsors pointed this out around the same time. That almost is a higher power speaking, and I totally understand the fear behind it. Anytime, I mean, when I first started sponsoring food like 2 weeks ago or so, you know, it's like, oh my God, it's all about it, and I got to make it perfect. And those old ideas definitely come back. And now, you know, and so how am I going to be enough? And blah, blah, blah. I don't know what your nutrition is. She's a vegan. I'm not a vegan, you know, and all that stuff comes. And I just remember, I'm not God. I'm not God. I am a vessel of God. And whatever I do is enough. How am I going to convince myself? It's not going to be me. You just do the action. The action as best as possible of what's right. So my suggestion would be to pause, to let God take it over, and to let the decision come from love. That's it. No human being, but love. A sponsor, a human being, we're all human. Just love and let God do it.
I have 31 years plus, right? In all that time, there are maybe four people who have gone through the steps with me completely. Okay? That I have a temper. What happens, it's a process. It, like Gunit was saying, that over time, I haven't had fist fights with anybody, but I've had people hang up on me. And I go through the same thing everybody else does, which is, what did I do? You know, how do I, all this stuff. And a lot of it ain't me. Cause I, like, we're here cause we're not all there. You know? And I've got to remember that I'm dealing with people generally. You know, like, it's very interesting. We talk about, there's a very interesting page, I think it's in the family afterwards, it says, we alcoholics are sensitive people. It takes some of us many, many years to overcome that very serious handicap. It is not a virtue to be super sensitive because it interferes. I have to learn to grow up. And part of that, with people I sponsor, for instance, there was a guy who was sponsored who was nuts. I mean, he this guy, you know, and I'm not trying to be, I'm just saying it like it is. It's like the guy has some serious living problems, plus serious health problems. And he's at OA a lot, and this is his life. But that is not my life. So his perspective is way different than mine, and what happened is that he had a health issue that compromised his ability to drive. And he was determined to continue to drive and said, this is what I'm going to do. I'm not going to the doctor. I'm going to do this. And we, you know, we had a relationship for about, you know, a good 7 years. You know, he was abstinent. And aside from saying he's running it, you know, my point, I got mad. I said, you're putting people in jeopardy, man. You know. Well, this is what I have the right to do that because this is the program and all that. I said, you know what? Don't call me anymore. Or I said something to that effect. And at a meeting, I mean, it's what I should have said was, well, think about it and call me back. But I had had enough. See, I'm a human being. I ain't God. We screw up. Expect it. You know, there's a saying, and I'm in show business too. There's a saying about being a music writer that you haven't arrived in Hollywood till you've had a score thrown out. You know, in other words, we don't learn from what we do well. We learn from our mistakes. So you have to embrace your mistakes. And it's your willingness to abstain through the mistakes and say, oh, yeah, maybe I should have talked nicer. And you make amends where appropriate. I attempted to, and that almost blew up, but not because of me. I was at Serenity Sunday, and it escalated to, like, don't touch me. And people saw it. This guy's crazy. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a therapist. This idea, oh, one other thing that I'll share with you that, as long as I've got this idea of, what is it? I'm busy, but I'll take outreach calls. Or, you know, people say that. I did not grow up with that. If somebody wants me to sponsor them, God will take care of the time. See, it's again me worrying about me. See, and the whole point of the sponsorship is to stop worrying about me because, like the speaker said, you know, it's something you can't miss. This idea of seeing people get well is an incredibly powerful thing that makes me feel, you know what, I'm not that piece of crap I thought I was. So that's why you do it. Doesn't matter. You just do it. Like Ganit said, and you're going to make mistakes. You're going to make mistakes. And so you embrace the mistakes, and it's growing from them that keeps us here.
Learning recovery is to, like, letting go of focusing on the what-ifs and what the mistakes are going to be. Look at the gratitude in going in with it with the desire to want to be with God, you know, as you get to see that. So the what-ifs of circle will never end.
Well, what we're here to do, this is a good question, man. I've gone through, Matt, if I understand, Matt's question was, how do you take somebody through the steps? Do you tailor make it to somebody? Do you have a specific, you know, what I would share is I've done the steps in several ways. And so I have a whole battery experience. I cannot share something I haven't experienced. Right. So the way I was taken through is the way with my spiritual advisor, Marty, was I have had to write on every step. Most people don't want to do that. you know. But like, I could get into a whole description of it. I don't want to do that here. But generally, since I had to write on all 12 steps, it takes time. Okay, and I have a guy I'm sponsoring now who is still writing on step one. You know, he's doing it. He's taking his time. And what I also can share, like one thing that was told to me was you pick the time in which you're going to share it. In other words, this is not like you have 6 weeks. I expect it in 6 weeks because I did in 6 weeks. What I was told is find a time. It's the same thing with committing the food. If like I commit my food every day. And so like the first thing with committing food is you can be as general or specific as you want, but be straight about it. And if you're going to change it, call ahead of time. That's how I have done it. Some people write it down. But, and so I have people call, start, and a lot of times, excuse me, it stops with that. That's the beginning. It's an ongoing process. So when stuff comes up, excuse me, I share my experience, and that's it. I need to keep it simple. Excuse me. You know, that'd be great.
Thank you.
I'd like to hear what she wanted to say.
Oh, no worries. Sure. So, you know, yeah, it really, it's, so I start off by basically telling how I experienced doing the steps, or, you know, how I experienced working with the big book and the step work and so forth with what worked for me. And then it's also, thank you so much, Courtney. And it's, but it really just does get tailored to each individual, how it comes and how that solution's going to come. Again, I'm not going to figure it out. It's going to be a power greater than myself as time gets revealed.
Yeah, okay, this is what I say, all right? The alternative, like, I am a sober alcoholic and have done, like, hospital, you know, all of those kind of things, too. Overeating is a little bit different, at least my experience, because the alternative of finding an overeater to help with, right, would be to go to Ralph's, look for some 400-pound person or 300 in a moo-moo, and as they're checking out their status, they say, listen, are you really happy with that? Now, tell me the truth. You think that they're gonna talk to me? You know, yeah, I understand. It's like going to and I've known guys that do this, like going, an alcoholic going to a bar, you go into, saw a guy face down in his vomit in the bathroom, you grab his hair and say, listen, man, you gotta change this, you know. It is what it is. We, you know, Overeaters Anonymous is trying to, I think we're trying to do more Spanish outreach, which I think is a big deal, which it, at least in my experience has been problematic, which I think will help. I think that, we're getting more connected with the health profession, which I think will help. I mean, we hear a lot of people coming in from EDUs. I think there's, you know, we're attempting to do hospital panels. But again, you can't, you know, here's what I was told is I'm responsible to carry the message, not deliver it. You know, and the way that I carry the message is by the example that I set. I saw something in here, in it, and you see it. Down at the bistro downstairs, this woman was making demands on the cashier, you know, and she was not nice about it. And I've seen that. I've seen us kicked out of restaurant, Denny's usually, you know, because people stiff the, you know, I mean, if I'm a member of Overeaters Anonymous, I'm setting that example of what we are. So, for instance, if I want to carry it to in my family, the only way to do that is the example of setting an example. See, that's it. So the idea of trying to carry it out there is like what I need to do is carry it in here. So that's my take on that.
Just to add, yeah, so it's very much about, for me, I believe in that tradition, program of attraction rather than promotion. I'm not running the show. God's running the show. And I can just speak from my experience with this. I had no background on anything even aware of 12 steps or outside help or addiction or so forth. I didn't come from that kind of a cultural background or a family background where, okay, it was kind of out there, but it was just like Mars, you know, that doesn't hit home to us, you know. And I had a friend in my life who was about, at that time, she was about 26 years sober AA and drugs and alcohol. So she knew addiction very, very well. And she waited before she shared her story with me until I was going to be in God's time ready to possibly hear it. And I asked her one time specifically, I said, when did you know I had this? And her answer was, from the day you walked into my life. 9 years she did not say one thing about her addiction. And that to me is exactly what I take as my truth. I'm not there promoting, hey, how do I know if that person has a problem or not? You know, they just might not, they might really just be nutritional or so forth. So for me, it's always about keeping it stupid and letting God create the opportunity and trust that I'm a messenger of His and will just follow, because I have seen how amazingly God has brought other friends just from anywhere through to me that possibly could use this. And I'm not, you know, I just sort of briefly share my experience, but I don't really like say I'm a member of OA unless God is directing me to. And if I do, and if I have, and if I will, I also will be trusting that that is a higher power rather than a mistake and beating myself up for it, even though my emotions and mind may not believe it or so forth, you know. But God's running the show and not me, so thank you. And also, you know, this is the first time I'm on the PI committee, public information. So that itself is a huge thing for me to be willing to be out there to carry a message. And if anybody's interested, those are the ways that we can do it. So power is in the numbers. Please be of service. Join the committees. Join carrying the message. And it also gets us out there out of our heads and recover. So thank you.
That is the ultimate. Yeah, you know, I had, like, my AA sponsor, who was from Pacific Group, which is Clancy Emmislin, who's kind of a interesting fellow, used to say, Ira, I can love you so much it'll kill you. You know, and a lot of times, to me, I mean, the 12th step is the ultimate expression of the spirituality of the program. And the 12th step is in three parts. It says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, the spiritual change is that I'm a selfish person, I overindulge, And I actually don't want to do that anymore because, like, the idea that I want to help in the world is the change, right? And the steps. Then it says, we tried to carry this message to other overeaters. Doesn't mean we necessarily do it, but we tried to. That's the example. Then the third part of it is, and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Not to master them, to practice them. Okay? So that's the three parts of the injunction of the 12th step. The 12th step, you know, the only way that you carry that is the example. So, for instance, if one of the things that we've heard historically about Overeaters Anonymous is it's cliquey, that we kind of only hang out with our own peeps and the newcomers sort of standing there. And what I try and do when I'm at a meeting is go up to somebody and say, hey, how are you doing? And what I was taught to do, by the way, by my AA guy, when you go up to three people you don't know, and you say, hi, my name's Ira, or in your case, you don't say my name's Ira, you say whoever. You say, my name's Jerry, I'm an overeater, how you doing today? And shut up. And what'll happen if you do that, you'll be with three people, they'll talk, but without doing a damn thing, you'll feel connected. And I was told to do that. I don't think we do enough of that in meetings. We have a tendency to just be real passive and say, well, I'm shy, you know, and it's like I only want to hang with, you know. The other thing is, and I've noticed this lately, and maybe it's only true in the Valley and not other places, but people don't want to share at meetings. I don't understand that. I do not understand people not wanting to share at a meeting. Like, nobody's looking for, you know, the voice of God to come through the Bible through every person that shares. But how you could come to a meeting, if nothing, you say, I'm grateful to be here. But for some, it's like I've been at meetings lately where they close early because people aren't sharing. And I don't understand how you recover by not sharing. By the way, I like the word share rather than pitch. Pitch is a sales deal. Sharing is we share our experience, strength, and hope. Because my nature is not to share. It's to take. So that's my take on that. I mean, in other words, you make yourself present for other people. And you get out of yourself, well, suppose I'm too fat, I'm too shy, that's I. That's the problem with that. If you stop worrying about that and get involved with people, guess what's going to happen? You're going to feel better, God forbid. Thanks.
So, great question. And I didn't think I'd have the chance to share on this, but I brought the AA 12 and 12, and I'm so glad. You know, I come from that disease of looking at everything as wrong and the compulsion to just want to believe that when the desire is everything is right and there is no mistake. Now, how do I solve that? Is just really doing something outside of myself. So when I do, and isn't that amazing? That is the greatest selfish gift that I want to give to myself and just act as if and think as if through the eruption of the volcano that wants to pinpoint the critical thinker over everything. And the 12th step is that gift to continue to act as if, and what I say, think as if, because there are no mistakes. And I really want to believe it, even though I just can't. You know, yeah, I can't. That's my self-will. I can't. God can. And I'm willing to do it. So in the AA 12 and 12, this is my favorite part of one of my favorite parts of the AA 12 and 12 in the last part of step 12, which is exactly, to me, is about acceptance and there only being good, right, and more good rather than focusing on the critical part. I get that choice, but I'm willing to trust that God is so big and so grand that he ain't gonna, like, create the negative and let me fall to make that choice or anybody else around me. There's greater good beyond my reason. And it says true ambition is the deep desire to live usefully and walk humbly under the grace of God. Which means, am I willing to be stupid and just let go of my fear of not being perfect for myself or you or anybody else? But rather, am I willing to be happy and put my hand in the hand of God? And this last paragraph says, these little studies of AA's 12 steps come to a close. We have been considering so many problems that it may appear that AA consists mainly of racking dilemmas and troubleshooting. Isn't it so easy for me to always be worried and make the worry everything, every little, a hangnail can be the size of Mars for me. However, if I look at the big picture, the sunshine, all of you being here, that can also be the big picture. I'm powerless. I'm just going to think as if and act as if. So I get the choice now. I've done my steps. Do I want to continue looking at the dilemmas and the troubleshooting? To a certain extent, that's true. We have been talking about problems because we are problem people who have found a way up and out. We have found a spiritual awakening. There really is no wrong. How many more times am I going to stand here and try to convince myself of it? I'm powerless. What's the spiritual awakening? The hand of God. If I'm willing to be out of my head, the ninth step has shown me I do not regret the past. If I'm really willing to see and be out of my head from the fear, the past is really wonderful. Now, how can I make that useful? Okay. Up and out, and who wish to share our knowledge of that way with all who can use it. My job is not to promote and get frustrated as to why you don't do what I tell you to do. My job is to just be a light of God, to be willing to be out of myself, to be asked, show me the way. I'm not going to figure this out. Show me the way. And I'm shocked as how he does. The fact that I'm here this morning when I absolutely didn't plan on being is God. The fact that I was able to listen to the encouraging words of my dear friend as we were having coffee to say, you're just talking to me about carrying the message and how that's become your greatest passion to be of service. And you just got asked to be on a workshop. And I paused and I said, let me think about it and I'll get back to you. And I said, that's exactly what my recovery is today. Deliver out of the fear from hesitation and just say yes and let God make it work. Even when my mind is like, am I sure? Okay. Who can use it? For it is only by accepting and solving our problems that we can begin to get right with ourselves and with the world about us and with Him who presides over us all. I'm not going to solve it. I'm not going to figure it out. I'm not going to fix it. What's my part? To be a humble servant. That's it. Understanding and humility requires humanity. There's not perfection on my expectations. Understanding is the key to right principles and attitudes. And right action is the key to good living. Therefore, the joy of living, of good living, is the theme of AA's 12th step. Good living can only come for me from being willing. And willingness comes from being out of myself today. With each passing day of our lives, may every one of us sense more deeply the inner meaning of AA's simple prayer, the serenity prayer to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I'm absolutely powerless and controlless over anything and everything. I have one choice, and that's the courage to change. Am I willing to put my hands in the hand of God's will? And if that's true, I've walked through the fear of saying to a sponsee, and God takes over where I'm willing to get out of myself to say, what is right for that person at that time from what I think, even past my judgments of, I don't do it this way, I don't do it that way. But somehow, some way, when I have the courage to just follow the hand of God, I end up getting my program stronger than ever.
Can you tell me the pages that you just read from?
Oh, the last part of the AA's 12, AA 12 and 12, step 12. The last part.
We have time for one more question.
It's an interesting question. I will tell you that it's not in your power to do anything. In other words, you just share your experience and her be, and what I was taught in AA, it's your behavior. It's not what you say, it's what you do. And as stuff comes up, that second, it's very interesting that most people misstate the first step. If you say, okay, what's the first step? Most people say it, we admitted we were powerless over food and that our lives had become unmanageable. That's not what it says. What the first step says is, we admitted that we were powerless over food, comma, that our lives had become unmanageable. In other words, the implication of that is very strong. That is, that if I'm overeating, my life is unmanageable. See? But if most of us don't even say it right, I mean, it's not up to me to correct, you know. By the way, do you realize you're saying the step wrong? This is process and is experiential. And congratulations on sponsoring somebody. And like I said, I have had so many people have come and gone. But the point is, and like Bill, and we got to remember this too. If you remember in the story when Bill, in the first 6 months of when Bill, Wilson was sober, he was going around trying to get drunks to straighten out, you know, and he was very disappointed and down, and Lois said to him, yeah, Bill, but you're sober. That's why we're doing this. I am not here to convey my wisdom to all of the masses here. I'm here to stay abstinent.
Because I've been debating myself, when do I say, when do I not? And really, that's just the old idea of me figuring it out and just trusting, you know, just trusting. I mean, oftentimes the only time that I become confrontational with the sponsee is exactly that question of love. When they're doing the self-beat and all of that, somehow, some way, I'm like, we're not going to end this conversation until you give me 5 lists of gratitude. And then I just literally go back to each one of those and point out the same things that they were saying. You know, so, I mean, it's like I don't figure it out. I do share my experience, strength, and hope. And if I end up being a little bit more stern about it, it's the hand of God that I'm trusting is just doing it.
There's one other thing I would like to say about sponsorship before we close, and that is, this idea of firing people. My experience is, and my AA sponsor, these guys are tough guys. Nobody fires anybody. What happens is people stop calling. But this idea that supposedly you fire somebody for what? Disobedience? What are you firing somebody for? You know, there was one guy who was patently crazy. I mean, this guy was out there, man, you know, who was calling me, and it was early on, and I had like maybe a year and a half. It was one of my first experiences with this stuff, and he was calling me up with the craziest stuff, and I was listening. I figured you're supposed to listen, you know, And so 45 minutes, an hour of this stuff, right? And I say, well, why don't you do, and this would happen over and over and over again. So finally, one Thursday I said, David, I said, listen, man, I don't think I'm helping you. Maybe you might want to find somebody else. That's what I said. Now, at that time, we made the mistake of having couples meeting. And the reason that we had an OA couples meeting was a mistake, was everybody who came to that meeting either blew their absence or got divorced. So that's what happened to that. Anyway, but this couple, they came. So this is naturally on a Friday night afterwards. His wife, who was also nuts, calls me up and says, right, Ira, he says, David's threatening to kill himself because you won't sponsor him. Now, I'm not a therapist. I have like a year and a half of abstinence or something like that, right? And this is heavy stuff, right? This is not a joke anymore. And I'm trying to do this right, like everybody's been talking about. So I can't get my sponsor. I can't, naturally, it's the weekend. And I can't get anybody. So I finally, on Sunday, I get my AA sponsor, Joe, from Pacific Group. And I tell him the story. And this is what Joe told me to tell her if she called back. He said to me, if she calls back, tell her that if he's going to kill himself, to do it in the bathtub so nobody has to clean up after him. Okay. And I'm thinking, man, that's cold. But I got the point. Okay, so I don't hear anything. And she didn't call. So the next Wednesday, I'm at my meeting, and guess who shows up? The guy, right? And this is after all of this craziness, and I'm going through all this agita and all this turbulence about, is somebody going to commit suicide because I blew it, right? He says, Ira, I've been thinking about what you said, and I think that I'm going to get somebody else because you don't have enough experience to help me. I had a resentment against that guy for 8 years.
It's a true story, I swear.
Okay, thank you all for participating. I would like to thank Gannett and Ira for sharing their experience, strength, and hope. The closing ceremonies will begin in 10 minutes, and thank you all for letting me be of service.
No mistakes. It's funny.
Thank you, Ross.
Thanks, Ron.
I guess I mentioned the right time.
No.
Yeah, you know what? I understand what your desire is, and the truth is that we're not patient people, and
I definitely wouldn't go up to the grocery store and say, I can help you, but you know, talk to my doctor about, do you have any other patients?
There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that.
That's what Bill and Bob did.
There's nothing wrong with that. The thing is, I think it's evolved in another sense that...
Even after I moved out of the valley, it's still my home.
At Bill's time, there was no other answer.
Thank you.
And so, like...